The views and opinions expressed on the following program are not necessarily those of the staff and management of Salem Media of Hawaii.
Welcome to Generations Radio, where the focus is on our seniors and their families. We are here each Saturday afternoon from 5 until 6 p.m., bringing you resourceful information with our radio team of professionals in the field of aging. Stay with us for the next 1 hour as we explore different ways to make life more exciting and meaningful for our extraordinary seniors, right here on AM 690 The Answer. And now, here is our host and the publisher of Generations Magazine, Percy Ihara.
So welcome back to Generations Radio this beautiful weekend. We actually, as you may know, we tape our shows on a weekday, but I'm sure you're enjoying your weekend. Hopefully the rain subsided a little bit, and hopefully our lava subsided a little bit. I don't know, our guests here maybe have heard about that. I've been getting texts and calls and emails from my friends on the mainland. Are you okay? Are you okay? I said, I live on the main island, and the lava is on a big island, but it's amazing how far the lava has come up, because where those fissures are is several miles away from where the actual volcano is. But anyway, good luck to them. Hope everything is fine out there, and and hopefully all our kupuna over there are being taken care of. As you guys know, we're here every Saturday from 5 to 6, Sunday from 3 to 4. And every week, we try to bring in an expert in the field of aging. As you guys know, I'm the publisher of the magazine, radio host, and TV host. However, I'm not an expert except for my mortgage business. So anyway, so every time we bring in an expert, and we found out about a lady that's coming in for a workshop, thanks to Todd Pang from the Manoa, Caring Manoa.
Yep.
That's right. I get you guys mixed up all the time. There's another Manoa place.
Many of them, yeah.
So Todd Pang, thank you for coming by and bringing our guest, special guest here. When I saw her online this morning, I was like, wow, she's kind of young. It's like, wow. Mm-hmm. But very impressive, Rachel Wonderland from actually Philly. Well,
yeah. I'm from South Jersey originally, but I live in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Oh, really? South Jersey. Oh, good for you. So welcome to Hawaii for the first time.
Thank you.
Well, hopefully it will bring you back more, and hopefully you can get a little bit of tan.
Yeah, it's tough.
I know. I mean, have you been surfing or body surfing? Or?
We did some hiking yesterday, so I got
really?
A little bit of sun.
Oh,
yeah,
my
but
goodness.
I will attempt to surf at some point.
Oh, good for you.
I will attempt it, yes.
Well, if you need some help, we have some friends down on the beach, next to the Beach Boys down there. And
yeah.
Well, I'm glad you didn't take her to, like, the Stairway of Heaven.
Have you heard none of that. Oh, no, please.
Beautiful.
Okay.
Part of the island, but dangerous. So we don't want – I have some fire captain friends. We don't want to be going after rescue. So, Todd, don't take her
please,
too high, okay?
Please, no. And you have to reapply sunscreen constantly.
Yeah.
So anyway, so Todd Pang from Caring Manoa, give us a little bit of background on you guys and what you folks are doing.
Yeah, thank you, Percy. I mean, I really appreciate you having us on our show, and also my mother, who has a completely separate business, right? But Caring Manoa is what's called a Type 2 Adult Residential Care Home, or ARCH as an acronym, with expanded care. And we have 16 residents. It's a very boutique kind of home.
Beautiful. I've been there.
Oh, you've been. That's right. You have been there, and it's meant to feel like a home. So it's a wonderful historic house in Manoa, and all of our residents have private rooms and private bathrooms. And the defining thing about us, I think, is that we just have a lot of staff on hand.
You do. I was quite surprised when I came in there.
Yeah.
So all 16 of your clients have individual rooms.
Private bedroom, yeah, and private bathroom. Everything's wheelchair accessible. The whole house
is. Sign me up,
because
you're younger than me. You'll be around longer
than
me.
Oh, come on, Percy. You got a space waiting for you whenever you're ready, but that will be some decades from now. And it's, you know, we're really trying to be very hands-on with our CNA help. Families have told us that their parents have not been better cared for in years because of the attention that we give them, and it's very quick and personalized to each of the residents. So we're very proud of what we do in terms of focusing on that care that is coming from a lot of staff in all directions.
Yeah, I've been there. I've seen it. I was actually, like I said, kind of quite surprised how much staff you have there. And it's very busy, and it's a beautiful home in Manoa. Manoa is where the University of Hawaii is. Actually, I went to school back there.
Yeah.
It's a great area to live in. And so give us your background. Give us the reason why you brought in Rachel here.
Well, I've been doing this business for about 7 years. I used to be in the hospitality and tourism business in China for a long time.
I met when I first met you.
Yeah, I was really fresh and new coming back home after years and years. And when I came home to help out with the family business, it was a big crash course in learning about elderly care. Sure. But one of the things I did last year was I read Rachel's book. I looked online, Amazon, to just try to get some more resources for my staff about how to care for our residents who are suffering from dementia. And I read the book, and I found it to be probably one of, if not the most practical resources I've read about dementia, especially in like a facility setting. You know, a lot of books are preparing families for living at home with dementia and how to work with that. But then Rachel's book was really particularly useful for us because it was about the facility setting. So I was so impressed that some months down the line, I thought, gosh, you know, maybe I should bring Rachel in to Hawaii as part of something I'm now calling our Caring Manoa Expert in Residence program. So she's the first and inaugural expert in residence that we have. You know, we can exchange ideas. She can come here to Hawaii and stay with us in our beautiful property, and we can exchange ideas in more of a in-depth and longitudinal period as opposed to just, you know, having like a one-off consultant come in and give us a few tips and then leave. So we're really excited to have Rachel here. She's here for the next 2 weeks, and she's already immediately helped us with our staff to identify certain things that we can tweak with our services to make it that much more comfortable.
So, but does Caring Manoa specialize in dementia care?
We don't. Yeah, and that's a great question. You know, there are care homes that do specialize in dementia care. You know, like the biggest one is Hale Kuike, and they are doing a great job at that. But all of us have experience with it, and it's important for, you know, us to be knowledgeable so that we can not just help our residents who are suffering with dementia, but our residents who don't have dementia so that they don't feel uncomfortable that they're living together with people who are suffering from the disease.
Yeah. So if you just tuned into the radio show today on Generation, we're talking about with Todd Pang from Caring Manoa. And we have Rachel Wonderland, an expert actually in dementia care. But for a lot of you guys out there, we've had several people talk about dementia and Alzheimer's on the show. And I think the recent public number is about 28,000 in Hawaii. With that said, I believe it's by 2030, there'll be about 56,000. And for that number, they say that's only 50% count because people don't get diagnosed right away. And one of the things that Hawaii has done, and the Center on Aging and UH, is they got a million dollar grant to actually help train the physical community, train the doctors and nurses and CNAs that how to identify it and get documented. So that number is going to increase dramatically. When I first started getting this business 16 years ago, when I did my research, I think dementia, Alzheimer's was, I think, number 11 on the list of top 10 of ways you're going to die. Mm-hmm. Several years ago, I read it again. It was about 9. And when I hear it was 6, and I think by 2020, it's going to be number 3. Pretty scary stuff. So it's really important. And so I'm glad you're tuning in. If not, go to our website, generations808.com. You can pull up the show. So Rachel, you know, when I saw you online, I go, wow, it's amazing. You're so young. But then I looked at your bio. You're a gerontologist.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, good for you. So give us a little bit of background. Well, really, my biggest question, and probably anybody listening, is why gerontology?
I always just liked working with older adults. When I was 15, I needed some volunteer hours to get into National Honor Society. So a friend and I started volunteering at a local skilled nursing facility in South Jersey, and I really liked it. And at the time, the girlfriend that I was with, she said, you know, you're really good at this. And I said, good at what? And she's like, you know, old people. And I was like, is that a skill? And she said, yeah, I think it's a skill.
It really is.
Maybe you should do that. I said, do what? She said, you know, work with old people for a living. And we were about 15 or 16.
Who thinks about that, right?
And I was like, okay. So at the time, I was considering being a geriatrician, which is a medical doctor who specializes in geriatrics. And I went to college with this plan. So when I got to Mary Washington, which is where I went to college, which is in Fredericksburg, Virginia, I started working my bachelor's in psychology with a concentration in pre-med. So my goal was to go to medical school. Very quickly realized that I'm terrible at math and was not going to have the grades in something like chemistry really kick my butt. And also, I stumbled upon the realization that I wasn't going to be able to spend time with people with dementia or older people in general because, you know, someone would be in your office for 15 minutes and then you'd send them on their way.
Right.
So I took a class called Psychology of Aging, and it was I just loved it. And so in that class, there was an adjunct professor from Virginia Commonwealth University who was working on her PhD in gerontology. And so I learned what gerontology was. So I went home back to my dorm room that night. I think I was probably a sophomore at this point, and looked up master's programs in gerontology. And I was like, this is what I'm going to do. So I spent the next two plus years of college focusing on everything related to aging. So I really invested my time, any internships, any projects I did in aging. So right after college, I went right into my master's program at UNC Greensboro. And that was that.
Well, it's a skill. I think it's a passion for people that care about people. Maybe even specifically older people. You know, I got in this business 16 years ago because of my day job, which is the reverse mortgage.
Right.
And one of my first mentors, Gordon, he gave me a book, actually. It's a Purpose-Driven Life. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. It's a Christian book, and he always would invite me to his church in California, and his pastor wrote the book. It's a bestseller for many years. Have you heard about the book, Todd?
No, I haven't.
Get a chance, Purpose-Driven Life.
I will, yeah.
It really changed my because I've always wanted to use my finance background to help people. And I'm very close to my parents. Unfortunately, my grandparents passed away when I was young. But I have a passion to help people, and that's what I do with my day job, the reverse mortgage. And it really changed my life. But then I realized early on that I didn't know a whole lot about aging. So that's one of the things I started doing, a radio show, a TV show, to bring experts like yourself in to educate me on what I need to know when I deal with my clients. So, but anyway, so you went to college, you're a gerontologist. Mm-hmm. So explain to people, to me, they don't know the difference. So a geriatrician is a medical doctor on aging, and a gerontologist is?
It's kind of like a social worker who works primarily with older adults is essentially what it is. So there's no licensure at this time. Like I have a master's in gerontology, but if you're a social worker, you can get your licensed clinical social worker and do all these tests. There's no licensure with gerontology at this moment, but I'm essentially a social worker for older adults.
With a master's degree.
Essentially, yeah. So, yeah.
But you specialize in actually the aging process.
But, you know, if people, it's interesting because I have a lot of friends and, you know, colleagues who have gerontology degrees, and they work in various different aspects. I know people who are like caseworkers. I have a friend who's a skilled nursing home administrator. I know some people on the financial side of aging. So you can pretty much work in any aspect of aging or healthcare with this degree. It just depends, I guess, which path you take. Yeah, which path you take.
So interesting, but so why you specialize in dementia care and I guess with Todd at the Caring Manoa, you know, at some point down the road, everybody's going to need some form of care. I've talked to many families. I counsel thousands of families in 16 years, and he goes, well, I don't know if I'm going to really need care. Well, as you guys know, it's statistics are startling. The national statistic from the ARP that I heard maybe 8 years ago was that 79% chance of women are going to need care, and men is 69%. That's a national statistic. Now, if you know, but you know, we have live in a great place, great food, relatively low stress, traffic except for 7 to 8 and 3 to 4, 3 to 5, we live a great lifestyle here. And so actually, those statistics are national. So I always tell people, add on 5 to 8 to 10 years. You're going to live longer in Hawaii. And with that case, now, you correct me if I'm wrong, I saw recently that once you reach the age of 85, it's about 49, 50% chance you can get some form of dementia.
That's right.
Isn't that scary?
Yeah, that's and I really think it's also because, one, people are living longer. Two, we're actually diagnosing different forms of dementia. Yes. So in the past, people used to just say, oh, grandma's getting old. She's getting senile. and nobody said, oh, wow, this is a form of dementia. We used to call it senility, which is kind of a bad word, geriatrics now. So, yeah, I think we're diagnosing it better. We're more aware of it. And yeah, people are just living. People are living much longer. Even if you don't get dementia, because dementia is not a normal part of aging, but even if you don't get dementia, there's a pretty good chance you will need some care at some point. Even if you, you know, you have a bad fall and you, you know, you break a hip or something, that's still care. You know, you might need, you know, some form of rehab, some, you know, a care community setting. Yeah.
Let me ask you this. So I've done a lot of gerontologists, a lot of friends in the business. Can I ask why specifically you decided to go in this form of aging?
I still love medicine. I love learning about how the brain works. My maternal grandmother had brain cancer and died from a glioblastoma 15 years ago. And during that, I was just fascinated. It was horrible, but it was also very interesting to see how she was affected by this brain tumor and what was happening with her brain. So that was really only my only family experience with a form of dementia. But, you know, I kind of fell into dementia care, I guess. I just started learning more about it. And I was like, this is interesting.
It is.
And I don't know exactly the moment that I was like, this is what I'm going to do. It just seemed like a really interesting part of some aspects of aging that you could potentially encounter dementia. So, yeah, I just was like, this is what I'm doing. And my first full-time job out of grad school was working with, was essentially like running the floor for a dementia care community and running all the activities. And I just loved it. I was like, yeah, this is exactly what I need to be doing. This is exactly what I should be doing.
Well, you're in a growing field because, like I said, the numbers are going to be staggering as we learn more about it. I don't know if you saw this. Was it 60 Minutes about a month, 2 months ago when he featured a lady that he covered over 10, 15 years? And he showed her on film when she could understand who her husband was, the person next to her, and she progressed with the disease and she slowed down. And unfortunately, he said he would never put her in a care home, and eventually he had to at the very end. But it was interesting. I got several comments from my friends, people in the industry say, it was really good to see because people don't see that. And thanks to the couple that really was able to be covered over those 10-year, 12-year period. But to really see the bad side of the dementia, but really what happens.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. And I think everyone, there's kind of a Hollywoodized version of dementia. For example, the movie The Notebook is a terrible depiction of Alzheimer's disease. It's completely inaccurate. It's complete nonsense. But there's kind of this idea that people get of dementia. Oh, someone's going to forget all of their loved ones and they're going to be sitting in a wheelchair staring out a window. And that's just what people think when they hear dementia. There's over 70 different types of dementia. Right. Alzheimer's being the most common type of dementia. And I've met hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people with dementia. No two people are exactly the same. Very different
course
of disease. It looks different for a lot of different people. So it's nice when I think probably the best documentary that's out there that I've seen is HBO's. It's called like the Memory Loss Tapes. And they have like 7 different people with dementia. And it's a documentary style and it's very realistic.
I'll write it down.
Great.
The Memory Loss Tapes?
Yeah.
On
free.
HBO?
Yeah, it's free online. It's been out for a number of years, and
I've never heard of that one.
Yeah, you don't need HBO to watch it, which is great.
The Memory Loss
Tapes. Memory Loss Tapes. Yeah, and it's really, it's good, it's sad, it's funny, it's very realistic. Yeah.
Well, it's really important for people to realize that, because one of the things I see is that as I deal with our clients and friends and people that we see in the workshops, they unfortunately, nothing can stop and slow it down.
Right. Right. So we don't have any medications right now that are going to fix it. I think people, you know, a family member will get on something like Aricept and the family will say, oh, good, it's going to solve dementia. It's kind of like taking DayQuil, you know, when the DayQuil wears off, you still have a cold. It didn't get rid of the illness. It just dealt with the symptomology. And I've also seen people who actually do worse on some of these medications. So we don't have a cure right now. We don't really have we don't have a cure. Because honestly, we don't know what causes a lot of forms of dementia.
That's what's amazing. You know, I've had several people. I had the Alzheimer's Association here. I actually had Ruth Gay, who is the Chief Public Policy Officer from Alzheimer's Association for California. And she was here about a month ago. And she said, we don't even know if it's hereditary.
Yeah, the only thing we know that's hereditary is early onset Alzheimer's, because that runs in families. So you can actually get, at this point, a genetic test.
Yeah.
But other than that, we don't know. I mean, we don't know if amyloid plaque is a marker of the disease or a cause of the disease. So there's a book that's popular right now called, The Cure for Alzheimer's. If somebody tells you they have a cure for Alzheimer's, that's probably a little too good to be true, because we don't know.
So why is the book popular then?
Because it has a catchy title and it's published by a physician. So sometimes, people get a doctor in front of their name.
We always want hope. We always want hope. But Ruth Gay from Alzheimer's Association is basically sat in his chair right here and said there was 5 potential drugs. And at the end of the day, we found out none of them really work.
Right.
I had actually Dr. Corey Liao, who is actually one of 10 clinical trial places in the nation. There's one here. I don't know if you ever get a chance to take her over there at St. Francis, the Hawaii Pacific Neuroscience Center. And he said, you can take a test and find out if you have that, I guess, gene or something. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, can I do it? It was off the air. He said, well, what are you going to do if you find out?
Right.
You're not going to change your life, because it could last, 7, 15, 20 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just because you have the APOE4 allele, just because you have that gene, doesn't actually mean that you're going to necessarily get dementia or Alzheimer's in particular. So, you could get the test, which I don't think is cheap. So you could pay a lot of money to get this test and then worry about the fact that you have this gene and it may never actually manifest in Alzheimer's. So I think getting the genetic test would be potentially useful if you have an early onset Alzheimer's family history, because then at least it opens up the discussion. But other than that, I don't know that it's particularly useful, because you're just going to be worried about it.
You're going to ruin your life.
You're just going to worry yourself into a black hole about it.
You're going to get all your bucket list, and you're going to run out of money, and you're going to be living a lot longer.
You're going to be worried about it, yeah.
Yeah, but anyway, we're going to talk about your book that you wrote and some of the things you're doing. But, one of the things that we get all the time is that it's really coming from the caregiver, the family's point of view. Mm-hmm. I call it a family disease, because it affects the whole family. We have a couple of relatives in our family that have dementia, and they've been caring for them over 10 years.
Yeah. Yeah. I like to tell people it's kind of a I think it's a nice thing to hear for some families, because it's usually worse for the family than it is for the person with dementia. A lot of people with dementia, not everybody, but a lot of people kind of live in a happier reality than we do. And so families can take solace, at least in the fact that even if they're having a hard time, hopefully their loved one isn't really that hard of a time.
Right.
Yeah. So in that way, I think it's definitely harder for the family, especially past an early stage, than it is for the person.
Yeah. And so one of the things we want to talk about in the second half of the show is, besides your book and your 16 tips, how do you count? Do you counsel families in all this? And then how do you get them transitioned to a place like Todd has over in Karen Manoa? So we're going to take a short break. Thanks to all our sponsors in our TV show. Thanks to Todd Pang and Karen Manoa for bringing Rachel in. We're talking about dementia care with Rachel Wendland, a local, not local, hopefully someday local, gerontologist from actually Pittsburgh, who's here for a workshop. It's actually this Sunday. I'm not too sure if there's much to sign up time, because it's going to re-air Saturday and Sunday. But
that's right. But it's good for your listeners to be able to hear Rachel on the program.
And hopefully we can bring her back.
Yeah.
So we're going to take a short break and we'll be right back.
We will be right back Topic with Percy Ihara from Generations Radio. If you have any questions or want to be part of our discussion, give us a call at 296-5467. That's 296-5467. This is Generations Radio on AM 690, The Answer.
Did you know residential care homes offer a family-oriented atmosphere? At Caregivers Heart Hawaii, our kupuna become part of the family. The smaller environment allows for more personal attention. For example, there's no waiting to go to the bathroom compared to other long-term care options. The patient-to-caregiver ratio is smaller and help is faster. Over time, residential care homes are less expensive compared to other long-term care options. Our caregivers are experienced and enjoy what they do, and all homes are ADA approved. Don't feel stressed and overwhelmed or try to do this alone. Aloha, I am Ku'unani Demonte with Caregivers Heart Hawaii. Let us help you with all your care home placement needs. Caregivers Heart Hawaii has knowledge and experience. For a free consultation and to learn more about us, go to caregivershearthawaii.com, where treating kupuna like family is our business.
When you feel like Vegas, there's just one place to stay.
Let your party at the Cow.
Grab a drink at the Holo Holo Bar. There's just one place to play.
Let your party at the Cow.
We got a fresh hot look, a new sports book. We got those local meals, just like Auntie Cook's. Aloha spoken here.
Let your party at the
Check out the Cow's new renovated look and see why the Cow is Hawaii's favorite place in Vegas to stay and play.
Moon Physical Therapy is here to help you back to recovery. Moon Physical Therapy is located on Ward Avenue across from Sports Authority. Physician prescribed for motor vehicle accidents, workman's comp, or that body pain that comes from rushing to play without warming up. Also, event cardiopulmonary rehabilitation with our one-on-one patient care. Moon's Aquatherapy heated endless pool allows for low-impact exercise with less pain on land. We will give you the right exercises to get you back to health. Ask your doctor to prescribe Moon Physical Therapy. Moon Physical Therapy. We achieve results.
If you're new to Medicare, we can help you work your way through all the questions, the details, and the headaches. Generations TV has gathered experts in the field to help you find the answers. This is Navigating Medicare.
A very important period is coming up, what we call AEP, Annual Election Period, from October 15 to December 7.
The annual election period is when you can change from one plan to another. The plans change. The benefits, coverage, and premiums may be different. So know what you should have. What are your current health needs, your budget, and priorities? You need to make sure the medications you are currently taking are covered and that your doctor is in the network you're looking at.
Like we mentioned before, all plans are different. There's no one plan that's good for everybody. Everybody got different wants and needs. Call us and we can help you.
Helping you work your way through the confusion, Navigating Medicare. Brought to you today by Financial Benefits Insurance, serving the entire state of Hawaii from the corner of Pi'ikoi and Kapi'olani in Honolulu.
Got Vegas on your mind? Get Vacations Hawaii on the line. Vacations Hawaii offers weekly 4 and 5 night Honolulu to Vegas packages, which include 3 meals daily from $6.99. Stay at Hawaii's favorite casinos, California, Fremont, Main Street Station, and Orleans Hotel. Vacations Hawaii will get you there in comfort on deluxe wide-body 767 planes with complimentary in-flight hot meal service. Vacations Hawaii's frequent flyer program gives you future travel discounts and credits. So if you're ready to win big, call Vacations Hawaii at 591-4777 or visit pointvacationshawaii.com.
Hi, I'm Margaret Wong with the Copeland Insurance Group. Let us be your Medicare resource throughout the year. We have agents throughout the islands to be of assistance to you. So if you have Medicare questions, we have the answers. Call us at 808-591-4877. Again, 808-591-4877. Thank you. We look forward to hearing from you.
Today, more than ever, we local people are living longer than any other state in the union, with more seniors, baby boomers, and caregivers. Generations Radio promotes the importance to be proactive as we all age. The radio team will focus on issues facing our seniors and their families, finding resources to navigate healthy aging along with financial, legal, and caregiving information. So join Percy E. Howara from 5 until 6 each Saturday, right here on AM 690, The Answer.
5914777.
Complete 4 5-night packages from $6.99. Vacations Hawaii, your favorite connection to Vegas.
Focusing on the issues facing our seniors and their families today. Here's our Generations Radio host, Percy Ihara.
So welcome back to Generations Radio. Very soon, actually probably in the next couple of days, you'll see the Generations June-July issue popping up in newsstands. Don't forget all the state libraries and the Times Pharmacy. That's the easiest place to get it on Oahu. On the Big Island is KTA, all the KTA stores, and thanks to them, they do a great job. Get it quickly because they do run out in about 3 weeks. And as you know, we're every other month. So the June-July issue will be coming out featuring two very well-known alums from MidPack. If you're probably less than 40 years or older than 40 years old, you might know her, Auntie Dottie Kroll, who is our administrator for, I believe, close to 40 years. So I knew her when I was a young kid in school, and so do all my classmates. And also Mr. MidPack, Galen Narimatsu, who is a past alumni president like I am, but he's still involved and still does newsletters for his classmates. So thanks to Galen and Dottie Kroll for being on our cover. So it's a very, very good story about their love for MidPack. And as you guys know, when you live in Hawaii, it's not what college you went to. It's what high school you went to. So it kind of personifies who you are. So it's a great story. And we do encourage all you alums from whatever school you're at to really participate and give back to your school. So it's on the cover, so check it out. And anyway, today we have Rachel Wunderlin from Pittsburgh talking about dementia care. And as a gerontologist, Rachel, the disease, as we mentioned earlier, there's nothing that stops it or slows it down. Mm-hmm. But it's really a family disease. And so what's some of the things that I think families don't understand about dementia and Alzheimer's, besides getting them confused like
right.
I did?
Right, right. So I like to say dementia, you can kind of think of it the way you think about cancer. Think about cancer, you know there's all different types of cancer. Dementia is the same thing. So people ask me all the time, what's the difference between Alzheimer's and dementia? Alzheimer's is the most common type of dementia. So it's kind of like saying, cancer and skin cancer, right? So skin cancer is a pretty common type of
cancer. So cancer is like dementia.
Yeah.
Dementia like an umbrella is the umbrella term of all these diseases. Mm-hmm. And I was surprised, you know, when I first started studying about it, I was surprised Parkinson's was part of dementia.
Yeah. So you can have Parkinson's and not get dementia. You can have Parkinson's and then get dementia, which is what we call Parkinson's disease dementia. Or you can have a related disease, which is called dementia with Lewy bodies. So dementia with Lewy bodies has usually people have some Parkinson's symptoms. Mm-hmm. So some like tremors, rigidity, things like that. Parkinson's disease, dementia, and dementia with Lewy bodies have overlap in that people often hallucinate. So they will see and hear things that aren't there. Mm. And they will also have fluctuating impairment. So Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, somebody's fine. Thursday, they're very agitated, confused, disoriented. Friday, they're back to baseline. So some different hallmarks of different types of dementia. That's why people say Alzheimer's and dementia all the time, and they don't realize that's kind of like saying cancer and skin cancer, you know? So that's how the easiest way to describe it, I think.
Yeah, I know. So when families, let's say they're diagnosed, what are some of the first things that the family, either one of you can answer this question, but how does the family react, and do they know much about dementia?
I think families don't know what to expect. They hear the word dementia and they go, oh, it's Alzheimer's. Not necessarily. I think the first question should be,
what type
of dementia is it? You know, can we go through the steps? Like, in order to really find out what type of dementia it is, you need to go to a place that looks at brain scans. They do cognitive tests. They do a blood draw. They talk to the family and they add up all this information and they give a type. So that would be the first best case scenario to find out what type of dementia it is.
But I think a lot of times, and I've heard statistics in Hawaii about a lot of the doctors won't diagnose. I've had clients say that my doctor won't diagnose me with that or my parent with that.
Right. I think a lot of primary care physicians don't have enough time to spend with the patient. And if somebody goes to, like, if their PCP is like a cardiologist, I mean, they're going to know a whole lot about the cardiovascular system, but they may not know enough about dementia because that's not their specialty. So they don't have the resources, the time, or maybe the information to diagnose a type of dementia. So they might just go, oh, looks like your mom's having some signs of dementia, you know, see you later. So the family doesn't get, you know, the family doesn't leave a lot of times the doctor's office with enough info. And they go, well, what do I do, you know? And then they end up getting into tons of arguments with their loved one, and they don't know, you know, they try to keep them at home for way too long. And the problem is people fall through the cracks because they just go, I don't know what to do. And that's usually what happens. I don't know what to do.
So Todd, over at Karen Manoa, your Karen was over there. That must be a very common question. What do I do? Because I always tell people when I find out, when somebody tells me, oh, my mom just got diagnosed with early onset or they have dementia, I said, I don't want to be the bearer of bad news, but it's only going to get worse. And they need mm-hmm. the plan, don't they, Todd?
Yeah. I mean, an analogy I sort of use is like thinking about wet cement that's like in a bucket or something. And over time, that cement's going to dry out. And if you want to move that cement in another location, like it's just going to be that much harder because it's drier and in the shape and form it used to be in. So coming from the facility perspective, I'm usually just recommending that people start looking at this early because we ourselves and a lot of other care homes have wait lists and it takes a long time to find a place. So starting early is probably the best thing. And it doesn't mean that mom or dad is going to move into the facility immediately. It just means that we're empowering ourselves with information about what to do. And I think Rachel mentioned something that we noticed too. I mean, I find that sometimes people wait a little too long to move into a place, and it's just that much harder of a landing for anybody, really. But especially for people suffering from dementia, it's a tough landing to be used to my home setting for the last 40 or 50 years, and to be kind of uprooted from that is just traumatizing.
Yeah, but it's inevitable.
It's inevitable. And yeah,
you're right. But a lot of families do take way too long, or they don't want to believe that, or they think they're going to get better. Mm-hmm. Like you said, mentioned Aricept and a few other pharmaceutical drugs. There, you know, it's hit or miss. Most times, it's missed. I think the only thing they would tell you, right, if you can correct me if I'm wrong, Rachel, is basically exercise and a good diet. Really, that's all they really say.
That's all we really have at this moment in time. Like, if somebody's very, very early in the stages, you know, a good thing to do is, like, always continuing to learn and, you know, exercising your brain. So, like, learning a new language or, you know, learning a new instrument, something like that could slow maybe the decline. But that's about where we're at, you know, with that. We don't really have too much.
But is this a misconception about dementia and Alzheimer's? Basically, they think they're going to be able to cure it, or they think they're going to what?
I don't know. I think the biggest misconception, misconception is that kind of Hollywood look of, oh, well, you know, it's going to be a little bit, mom's going to be sitting in a wheelchair staring out a window in a nursing home. So people don't even know what community care looks like. Everybody calls everything a nursing home. So, like, Caring Manoa is not a nursing home. A nursing home is a skilled nursing facility. It's actually licensed differently than assisted living. But people have this kind of like, I'm not going to, you know, mom said never to move her into a home, so I'm never going to do that. And I think there's this really intense fear, this institutionalized idea of what, you know, assisted living looks like. And it's like, oh, well, I'm never going to move my loved one there. And they're kind of doing themselves a disservice and their loved one a disservice by immediately saying, I'm going to keep this person at home forever. A lot of times it's not feasible, and a lot of times it's kind of a bad idea.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can't remember statistics I saw regarding caregiving. If you're caring for somebody – For like 7 years, you lose 1 year on your life expectancy, something like that.
Oh, yeah.
I was like crazy. I told my cousin, I said, you know, you just lost a year right there caring for your mom. I mean, and I have neighbors that are caring for their parents and they're losing weight. They don't go out. They mm-hmm. hardly have any friends around. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, I you know, my magazine, we have like 8 people that work with the magazine. And I'm actually the only one that doesn't have firsthand experience with caregiving of all people, me. But they just try to take on too much. And I always tell people, share the load, you know?
Yeah. A lot of people with dementia have one primary caregiver. And usually it's, if they have a daughter, it's the daughter. Usually if they have a daughter, it's her. And she ends up taking on like 120% of the work. And you just can't do it. I mean, I always tell people you can still be a great caregiver and have your loved one live in assisted living. There is no shame in it. I think there's a lot of shaming that goes on. So, for example, I have a blog on dementia care and my book is about dementia care. And a lot of what I write about is assisted living, skilled nursing, personal care homes, things like that. And occasionally I'll have someone say, oh, well, you know, I moved my so-and-so into assisted living and it was terrible. And I always tell people that's like going to, you know, McDonald's, having a bad meal and saying, well, I'm never going out to eat again.
Right.
And it's just this generalization that I think kind of perpetuates the shame of moving somebody when in a lot of situations you need to move that person and saying like, I'm going to, you know, grit my teeth and like take care of this person at home forever is a lot of times really unhealthy for the caregiver and for the person with dementia.
It's dangerous, especially if they're living by themselves.
Yeah, it's super dangerous, especially when I've seen this frequently. I see a married couple, they're both 85 years old, and the husband's got dementia and the wife is, you know, just 85. And she's over here trying to help her husband get dressed when this guy's got, you know, 50 pounds on her. And she's 85 and bearing like the physical issue alone. And I mean, like if he falls, she tries to get him up, she falls, he can't call for help.
And unless he has an emergency response system.
And here's the thing with dementia is a lot of people don't know to even use that. Yeah. So I see family members kind of outfit their loved ones with all these tech devices like, well, if dad falls, he can press this button. Dad doesn't know to press that button, you know? He's going to take that life alert off and put it on the table because he doesn't understand why he's wearing it.
So what are some of the changes that you've seen, or maybe Todd, or you've seen in terms of how to deal with dementia and how to counsel the families?
I think there's definitely been a change. It's very slow, but the change of, okay, maybe we actually need to stop arguing with people with dementia. Maybe we need to embrace their reality. That's getting a little better. In the past, there's this idea of reorientation. So saying like, well, you know, mom, don't you remember dad's been dead for years and it's 2018 and blah, blah, blah. So it's getting a little bit better trying to get away from reorienting people, but it's a slow process. There's family members oftentimes want to correct their loved ones with dementia because they want them in a nice way. They want them to be back in our reality, and it's hard.
It's very hard.
It's hard. Yeah.
I know you wrote a book, so tell us about the book that she wrote. It's called "When Someone You Know Is Living in a Dementia Care Community: Words to Say and Things to Do."
Yeah, and I think the subtitle part of that is what I found most useful. Is it's almost sort of directive. You know, what should you say, and what should you do to help your loved one who is no longer living at home? And going back to what you were saying, you know, I think some families don't realize how bad off their loved one's dementia is, because if I'm used to the home that I've been living in for a long time, you know, I can function relatively well, and it kind of masks the degree of my impairment sometimes. So what we notice is that when we have people who have been living in a place too long at home, perhaps, and then they come in, the like I was saying, the landing is that much harder. Rachel's book, I found, was just really practical in terms of that sort of directive on, you know, these are going to be things that might be triggers. And we just had that experience this morning, in fact. You know, one of our residents had it was calling out for his relative, and we had some pictures that he was looking up of his relatives, and Rachel was very skillfully just removing those pictures to reduce a trigger that was agitating him, and then then we could redirect him into something more pleasant. You know, those are just like practical things that when we're interacting with people who don't have dementia, we just think, okay, well, that's, you know, a picture might make somebody feel better. But in this case, it was a trigger because the gentleman felt lonely and anxious, and those are experiences I think that we have in the home. Aside from Rachel, you know, when we're dealing with residents who are struggling or agitated, the arguing or the trying to correct somebody just escalates the issues. So
it's a technique, and you really have to be trained on that.
Absolutely.
And that's how to talk to them, how to touch them.
Yeah. That's why we're so happy to have Rachel, you know, working with us, and also sharing her knowledge with your listeners, because it's almost counterintuitive, you know. Mm-hmm. And one other thing, Rachel also does improv comedy, which I did a little bit some years ago, and believe it or not, and it's just naturally a compliment to it. Yeah. I find it's
not that, to be
can you give us can you give us an example?
So not to be confused with stand up. So people think stand up is, you know, when you get up there. Stand up's when you get up there and you tell jokes and it's just you.
Yeah.
Improv is usually you and one or six or seven other people, and you have a team, and you get a word suggestion or you don't, but usually you get a suggestion, and you essentially build an improvised play off of it. So you're just making up scenes, you're making up a play. And one thing that you do in improv, the biggest rule of improv really, is this idea of yes and, which means if you tell me something, I agree with it and I add to it. And this makes a lot of sense because this is what you do in dementia care as well. The inclination that a lot of caregivers have for somebody with dementia is they'll say, oh, you know, I just talked to my mom yesterday. And a lot of caregivers will say, well, that doesn't make sense. Your mom's been dead for years, and don't you remember? And then all of a sudden, everybody's upset. What you would do in improv is if somebody said that to you, you'd say, oh, that great. Did you guys have a nice conversation? And this is really what you're going to do in dementia care as well. And it is. It's not it doesn't come naturally to most people, because most people want to say, well, you know, answer that's not correctly. Real. Like, I don't want to lie. Come back over here. You know,
but you got to learn the same way.
You have to be able to embrace someone's reality. That's the phrase that I use all the time. It just go. Your day is going to be a lot better.
Can't fight it.
You can't fight it. Like, you know, yesterday I was working. I was observing at Caring Manoa and had a resident who said, oh, you know, I need my pills. And, you know, some of the caregivers are going, well, you already had your pills. And she's going, No, I didn't. And so I walked over and I said, oh, we're going to go get your pills for you. And she said, okay. You know, and instead of trying, a lot of people want to use logic, because that's what we do in our day-to-day life.
Yeah.
Is when someone doesn't agree with us, right, we present the facts of the case in a logical way, mm-hmm. but dementia is not logical. So presenting logical, reality-based facts to somebody with dementia is not ever going to work. So, yeah.
They don't think like that, first of all.
No.
Right.
No. And their reality, I like to say, is like most people with dementia have at least one foot in another reality. And a lot of times that reality is a combination of things. Usually it's a reality that happened already. So things that happened 30, 40, 50, 60 years ago. And so a lot of people with dementia are looking for, you know, maybe their wife who passed away, or they're looking for their kids who are now grown. And so they have a foot in another world, and it's easier for us to go over to their world than go, you know, hey, come back over here, because it's not going to work. And it's just going to upset everybody.
So what are some of the successes that you've seen in dealing with either with a dementia patient mm-hmm. or with the family?
Working with the family, it's always interesting to see people make this connection. I teach a lot of caregiver classes, and when you start explaining this, people are always really reluctant to understand it at first because they go, well, I don't want to lie. You know, I don't want to lie to my mom, so I just tell her the truth. And I say, well, you've done something. You've told her the truth of our reality. But the truth of our reality no longer applies to her because her reality has shifted. So we have to tell her the truth of her reality. And people go, oh. And especially when you start explaining this with examples. So like this woman who wanted her medication. Instead of saying, no, 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 you already took it, we're going to say, all right, we'll go get that for you. Solve the problem. I had a resident once who was very fixated on going to community college. This guy's like 86. He's in a wheelchair. You know, he's dementia. He's not, you know, we're not signing him up. He's not going to community college anytime soon. But he was so fixated on this for like a week. And the staff kept saying, well, you know, you can't. And he's going, I can. So I went and brought him a clipboard and I brought him a piece of paper that I had typed on. And I typed a letter. I said, you know, welcome to community college. Here's where you sign up for classes. And he signed up for classes. Now, he's not actually going to community college. We're not, you know, bringing him there. But this totally turned his mood around. Suddenly, he's got a smile on his face. He's eating lunch. He's telling his, you know,
he's in class.
His friends at the table, I'm going to be taking classes. He completely dropped it after that point. We never heard about it again.
That's probably one of his lifelong dreams.
Yeah, he had apparently been really close to finishing his degree. And he had to, like, drop out to take care of his mom or something like that. And he never got to finish school. So, right, like, let him finish school.
So one last thing I wanted before, you know, as people age and you have get the disease, explain to, maybe in your form way of how people regress in their memory. They lose the short-term memory mm-hmm. and they regress backwards.
Yeah. So I hate saying that people with dementia are like children because they're not. Sometimes people say like, oh, you know, they're going backwards in time. I like to say that people with dementia are losing the gains that they've made as adults. So they're still adults and they have all this life experience. They're just sometimes losing some of the stuff that they've gained. Like they're losing their ability to maybe use utensils and they're going kind of back to eating with their hands because that's what they did when, you know, that's the first thing they learned. So dementia is not a normal part of aging, but you know, if somebody does get dementia, yeah, they're going to have more trouble with stuff that we learned as we went on. So some of the, like the social graces, you know, like maybe somebody's, they have no filter. So somebody's just going to say whatever they think. They don't like your shirt. They're going to tell you about it. You know, you're going to hear about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, Todd, we got to end the show. Hopefully, we get you back here, Rachel. Todd, how is the best way to get a hold of you guys? And if they listen to it Saturday, they can sign up and give you a call for Sunday's
absolutely.
Workshop.
Well, we have a link on our website, caringmanoa.com. And I know there's a lot of people that don't go online. So they can also call us at 779-8871. And 779-8871. And if they would like to attend, we still have some seats available.
June 10th, Sunday in the afternoon,
I believe, right? At 12:30 p.m. It's at the Manoa Grand Ballroom in the Japanese Culture Center.
Okay, so, yeah. So if you live here Saturday, if you're here Sunday, it's probably power ready. But I know you can do more. And Rachel, I'd love to have you back. Rachel has a blog, and it's Rachel with a R-A-C-H-A-E-L.
Yeah.
Wonderlin, WONDERLIN.
Yep.
And yeah, just Google you.
You can just Google me and find my blog. Yeah.
Yeah, your books online. Yeah. But I appreciate your time and welcome to Hawaii. Hopefully, we can bring you back.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks for having me.
I appreciate it. So, anyway, the June, July issue of Generations Magazine is out. Check it out online as well. Or just go to one of our major locations like the library and the YMCA, Big City Diner, and Vacations Hawaii. And all lastly, Times Pharmacy. So thank you very much, everybody. Have a great weekend. Aloha and live well.